And it's the only way you're ever gonna learn. You look back and it's all in the past. I'm dwelling on the thoughts I cannot say to you. If I don't say the words, then maybe it's not true.
Good evening, welcome to Steve Wraith's True Crime Podcast, and tonight we're discussing whether it's time to set the man free. Bronson Fit to be Free is what I entitled it. Of course, he's now known as Charles Salvador. Got a great panel together tonight. Just want to thank everybody for coming on. Everybody here has got something to say about Charlie. Bobby from the Real Honest Truth. Terry Ellis, who I've had on the podcast before, good friend of mine. Anne, of course, who you know from doing many shows on this channel. Lee, a former prisoner and a former prison officer. Holly, somebody who's worked again in the prison system. And Kevin, who you will have seen on the documentary last week, which has had quite a response, it has to be said, from the general public. And probably had certainly has had massive figures last week. Interesting to see Kevin's take. And Kevin, I am going to come to you first, mate. So I'm going to put you up here. And ask you, first and foremost, you know, with regards to Charlie, is it feasible for him to come out of prison straight away from where he is? I know the answer to this, but I'd like to hear it from you, because you've served a long-term sentence. Charlie is in segregation. Is it fair to let him out, really, after 50 years with, you know, no break out of the prison like that?
So the problem you have is that people say he cannot be released into society if he behaves in a manner that is not acceptable to society whilst in prison. It would also depend on where Charlie's released to and how he's released. So if you took Charlie and you stuck him in a field, in a home, with woods and trees, a load of paintbrushes and paints, he'd be calm and relaxed. You stick him in a city, in a hostel, or in a tower block, that might be somewhat problematic. Of course, everybody wants to be released, and I believe he could be released, yes. It's how he's released and what they put in place to do that. Because Charlie could be released, say, for instance, I think the place is called Warren Hill, and you skip the DCAT there, but they integrate you back into society. And now, say, for instance, he was knocking around with an old lifer, 58, 60. I'm 55, so I'm an old lifer. I better be careful when I say that. Someone a little bit older than myself who's had some experiences that Charlie will face upon release, so we can ease him into it. But I don't think he should be around too many people. He's been in the human warehouse for far too long around too many people. But my answer to that question is yes, I do believe he can be released.
Okay. Just for people, just to paint a picture for people, I've visited Charlie on numerous occasions. Charlie's in a segregation unit. It's a prison within a prison. He's got things now which he didn't have, you know, many years ago, which is a telephone, he has a TV, he has his canteen in his cell, he's got a bit more to, you know, to keep himself happy, radio, things which, you know, he's had to earn by behaving himself. So it's the fact that he doesn't integrate within the prison population. You know, he only sees three other inmates, one of whom he doesn't really particularly get on with, it has to be said. But there hasn't been any problems, and that's a big plus for him with his parole hearing. Terry, again, somebody who's been in prison, who's come out, who's turned over a new leaf, who's had that opportunity to integrate. Your perspective, you know, what's your take on Charlie? What's the best way to release him? I heard something today. I listened to the report today. I think it was a prison psychiatrist to come in and more or less said that it wouldn't be right to let him straight out, but that a managed situation would be beneficial. Let him integrate with other prisoners first, then potentially move him to an open prison. Is that something you would see as a reasonable way of doing things?
You know, I've met many lifers and lots of guys who've done lots of years, 20, 30, 45 years. And at the end of a sentence, we all get put into a DCAT prison. And we're told this will integrate us back into society. And I know from my own personal experience, the last year was basically a smoking mirrors process. You know, I was put in a DCAT. I was told I would get work. I was told I would be integrated. And on the last 14 days of my DCAT, they sent me out on community service. So 14 days before, I was a danger to the public. I was someone who couldn't be released. And in 14 days of doing community service, I was now released from prison, and I'm back in society, and I was okay. So that's the whole process of being reintegrated. As far as Charlie's concerned, look, he's a very tough guy. You know, this is a man who's done 4 years in solitary confinement. You know, we know the United Nations have said, being in solitary confinement is akin to torture, you know. And they sent out a directive to all the countries around the world saying solitary confinement shouldn't go beyond 14 days now, or 15 days. And that is from scientific evidence. This guy's done 40 years. If you know him, you've spoken to him, he's very strong. He's got a lot of interest in his art. You know, most people that have done 4 years, you know, suffer from anxiety, depression, thoughts of suicidal thoughts. And the majority of that process is psychosis, delusions, hallucinations. And you know, anyone who's spoken to Charlie knows that he can see a time when he's free, and he's also very articulate in the way that he's actually conveyed that to people. So you know, I'd say that he, more than anyone I know, is probably one of the strongest people to do 4 years in solitary confinement. And I think he would breathe coming out of prison. And of course, you know, I'd be stupid to say he doesn't need any help. You know, if he's got a strong network of people around him, his friends that he can talk to, I think he would get back in fairly easy. I don't think it's going to be any trouble to someone of his caliber and his strength of mind.
Okay, Anne, good evening. What's your thoughts on this? I mean, Charlie's never killed anybody. He's never murdered anybody. He caused a lot of damage to prison and to Broadmoor in particular. He took people hostage in prison, staff, governors. He also took some Iraqi terrorists hostage as well, and sang to them and tickled their feet with feathers back in the day. But that's behind him. The one thing I will say about Charlie, in the time that I've known him 20 years, is he's owned his past. He's admitted that he's done wrong, and he's tried his very hardest to comply and do things, and he's changed. And a lot of people have said that the TV show that was done last week was detrimental to a chance of parole. Some people have said that the podcasts that I did for him, at his request, it has to be said, were detrimental. What other way had Charlie got to communicate to show people that he's actually sane? A lot of people doubted his mental health. They thought he was crazy. And let's face it, most people would be crazy locked behind a door 24/7, being fed through a hatch for 23 years like he was. But I've met him. I've spoken to him. I've corresponded with him for years. I genuinely think he has earned the right now to be able to walk through those gates. But I believe it's got to be managed. It has to be done properly. You can't just put the poor man out and expect him to adapt to modern day life straight away. It has to be managed. But I've got to be honest, with the way I do these podcasts, I don't ask you all for your opinion beforehand. I've got a feeling what you might say, but I've invited you all on. So, Anne, the floor is yours.
Well, you've missed one thing out. Why was he originally put in prison?
A robbery.
Not just a robbery, was it?
Armed robbery.
It was, yeah.
Armed, yeah.
Now, this is the issue I have right now. I'm not saying that, you know, he shouldn't be released. He shouldn't give him a chance. But what gets right up my nose is when people start painting what are violent criminals who will cause in some of the victims. I mean, if you had a gun held to you, like having a chainsaw held to your neck, like another person did and laughs about, that can cause CPTSD in someone, and they have to live with that. And that's what you've got to understand. And is he reformed? I don't know. I remember hearing your I have listened to your talks with him. And do you remember I said one of them wasn't convincing me when he was trying to tell the youth not to go into crime? It was all like, you know, you're going down, and I thought, this isn't a person, this is a caricature. He's turned into a caricature of what he wants people want him to be like. And I thought it's not coming across as convincing. The issue I'd see with him being, you can't just release him. If you just release him after all that time, how's he supposed to cope? It would be like walking into an alien world. 50 years ago, it was completely different. Completely different. So it would have to be managed, but I don't buy this poor old man that people keep on saying, because I was listening to Eamon Holmes and someone else going on about it and saying, well, he didn't murder anyone, he didn't do this, he didn't do that. No, but he caused trauma in people. And that's what you've got to take into consideration. So release him by all means, but don't release him on the fact that he's some kind of a poor little old man that's, you know, he's reformed and all this business, because we don't know that for sure. We don't know. And apparently things that he said in the hearing didn't paint him in a good light, did it? The way he was phrasing himself.
You'll never change Charlie Ann. You'll never change him for the way that he speaks and his views on life. He's very outspoken. It shows on the stuff that he's done over the years. But that doesn't make him a bad person. Go on.
Very briefly, I didn't want to take down. Well, so yeah, there are victims, of course, with most people who commit crime, who have done. But what people feel for Charlie is it of his age? Are we a forgiving nation, or are we a Haitian hell bent on punishment all the time? Or working with people and showing them love or bashing it into them to get them to do what you want? Norway's a prime example of that. They've got the best economy for their living standards. Lowest crime rate, lowest reoffending. Why do we follow countries like Canada who do courses that aren't failed there when we're just starting them and they're reporting that they're failed? But regards to Charlie and victim, there is, but how many, if I might just say, over 48 years, how many paedophiles have been arrested and released? Arrested and released and arrested and released. If you said 500,000 over 48 years, okay, what are their victims gone? Now, of course, there's crimes out there that people are arguing, there's people on the streets that shouldn't be there. The child has 48 years of misbehaving in prison. But if you get some laws in prison and a culture in prison that isn't like social society outside, and prison system cannot protect you, and it's certainly failing you now that there's thousands of people like Charlie who haven't done as long, but have done exceedingly long times, that shouldn't be there now. So our system isn't coping to release them. And that's why Charlie's in that state. He shouldn't have been in them blocks, being sprayed with pepper spray, treating a human being like that, because he's got a grievance. But in Argentina, you train to be 4 years for a prison officer, in England, 7 weeks. That's the problem I think people have got. We've got a human body, a human soul, in prison for 48 years, because we haven't handled that man right or managed him to be released in society correctly. And that's my argument there.
You know, I just want to come in here, just on top of what you just said there. You know, I remember John McVicar and Jimmy Boyle, you know, they were classed as dangerous and people that should never, ever have been released. You know, and they were in fights. They had altercations with governors, screws. You know, people got their arms broken, black eyes, broken noses, everything. And anyone who's ever been in a block knows that the brutality down a block is, you know, there's nothing compared to what happens on the wings. You know, you go down a block. It's a world within a world, and violence rules down there, and most of that violence comes from the screws. So I can understand why Charlie is the way he is. You know, he is a product of a regime that believed that they could sort of torture him into submission, and he never broke. You know, but he's. You know, anyone who's been down the block and for a few months would tell you that, you know, it's not a place that you thrive in. It's not a place where you want to gravitate back to. After 3 or 4 months in a block, you know, you want to go back on the wing. You know, he's been down there 40 years. You know, he took someone hostage. You know, and that's regrettable. And I don't, it's not something that I would agree with what he did, but you know the frustration that he felt from being CS gassed, being beaten, you know, and not being heard, you know, you can you can you you can you know you, sometimes you get backed into a corner in, when you're in prison. The only way to go is to do what you did. You know, if we look at the other side of the coin, you know, since 2000 to 2006, 1,300 prison officers were found guilty of assaulting prisoners. And racial discrimination and acts of violence on prisoners. Now, I think only one prison officer who actually broke his hand on a prisoner's head and jaw, he got 18 months. Now, we're going to go. I'm going to go back to what you said about the trauma that people suffer from the hands of Charlie. But you know, it's disproportionate to what the officers got, 18 months. The terrorists, the Iraqi terrorists, who took the plane, they're all out now. You know, he said, you know, I've done 35 years, and you know what? I own it. I take responsibility for that. But for the last 15 years, it seems like the authorities just want to make an example of him. You know, now I think that's where our sympathy comes from, and our will to see him freed. You know, because he has gone past, you know, people that have killed their whole families, have done 15 years and come out. Rapists, paedophiles, kill kids, do 15 years and come out. He's done 35 years for what he did, and he's had another 15 years on top of that. So, you know, that's where our sympathy comes from, and that's why we want to see Charlie out.
I think it was fair comment as well. Just while it's in my mind, Phil Danielson, of course, is the prison officer who on many occasions has been brought out to give his story. And you know, rightly so. He was traumatised. He had to leave the job. But that documentary that was made last week, was broadcast last week, has been made over the last, well, took 5 years to put it all together, is the first time I've actually heard him say, "I think justice has been served." So when Phil Danielson, the victim of what has to be said probably the crime that's caused the most trauma,
I don't think anyone's saying he shouldn't be released. I'm not saying that, but what gets up my nose is when people are some. It doesn't just happen to Charlie. I've seen it happen to other people. They painted some kind of perfect. Yeah, it's wrong the way things have happened, but at the end of the day, you know, I'll put my views. I always think of the victims first, then I say put the offender second, they right second. Now, of course, that's not saying he should be kept in there, but if he's let out, he'll need a hell of a lot of support and he'll need ease. Now, there's no way on God's earth to get out of prison after all that time and be able to cope. He'll need coping mechanisms. So I'm not saying he shouldn't be released, but I just don't buy this, you know, trying to only admit it. And someone was in prison. Did those people that were in prison have been released? Were the abducting people in the prison?
Let's get a prison officer's view. Let's go at the bottom row. Holly Gunn, you wanted to make an objection then. I don't want you to lose that point. So you go then.
Yeah, only because I've only got till 7:30. Maybe a bit longer because I'm off teaching yoga tonight. So from my perspective, obviously, as an ex-governor, having managed people on segregation units for long periods of time, having been involved very heavily in public protection, high-risk prisoners, etc., etc., my belief is that management, and I use the, you know, inverted commas, are terrified of putting their name to any sort of, you know, any sort of reintegration back into normal population, you know, working his way off the segregation unit. I personally have never come across anyone that has been given parole straight from segregation. And bearing in mind, a lot of prison information obviously is fed into the parole hearing. And basically, that's the only information that they have to go on. And obviously, with his history, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, everyone, parole board, prison, anyone that's involved, probation, and excuse my French, but they're going to be shitting themselves, because if he's released and puts one foot wrong, someone's head is on the chopping block. That's the bottom line. But in terms of my perspective, I do think he should be released, but I very much agree with Anne in terms of he's been, you know, I don't know the guy, obviously, Steve, you do. It's almost like he's this mythological anti-hero. And we forget that, yeah, there have been victims along the way. That's not to say he shouldn't be released. I definitely think he should be released. I definitely think he should be given a chance. But listening to you all about saying about his mental strength and stuff like that, I don't think anything can prepare you for the shock of moving out of segregation for so long and going into the normal world. And I personally don't know how that would be managed safely for him and for the general public.
Do you not think it would be easier for him to go straight into, I know what you're saying, but rather than putting back on a wing and having to do that step and show your worth on a wing, I think that would be far more dangerous than maybe just trying to put him into the community in a kind of safe house, stroke open conditions.
Yeah, I don't think crowds of people on a wing would necessarily be a good idea for him. I think that would be, you know, there would be people that were out there to say, I've done Charlie Bronson, I've done this, yeah. I've done that. You know, I think that would be dangerous for him. I don't know how he would cope in a Cat D. Maybe a Cat D might be, you know, an option. But as we've just heard, you know, they don't necessarily do what needs to be done. I'm not sure what psychological sort of intervention that he's getting, whether he responds to that, whether he's engaged in any sort of therapy. But I do think there needs to be a lot of preparatory work and then a lot of support afterwards with him being released. Like I say, you make some excellent points about people. There was someone in the comments that said, you know, Gary Glitter was released after 8 years. I mean, what the actual, yeah. you know what I mean? And he does deserve a chance, but my gut feeling is that he won't be released. That's my gut feeling. From a corporate management stance, there will be no reprieve for him, unfortunately, I think.
I know you've only got about 5 minutes left, Holly, so I'm gonna ask you the question. Do you think there will be some kind of progress? Because he's got to be given some hope. This isn't Dennis Nielsen. This isn't Peter Sutcliffe. This isn't Myra Hindley or Ian Brady. It's, you know, Charlie Salvador. I guess he's become the press's favourite column inch filler because it used to be the craze. And I know because obviously I knew the craze as well. I visited the craze in prison and those guys were, they're still to this day constantly making news, whether it's a look back on days gone by, a reference to somebody who's been in prison who could have been compared to the new craze, whether it's a new film, whether it's a new book by an old friend, whether it's the death of Nipper Reed recently, you know, there's always a headline about the craze. Now, Charlie's the same. And Charlie does, as we all know, he does like it. He does like the publicity. He does like the notoriety. Is he being a little bit of a victim of that? Is that will that be looked down on by the parole board, or do they have to push that to one side, Holly?
I do think that impacts on how he would behave following release. If you are courting attention, if you are courting publicity, is that going to continue? You know, if that continues on the outside, there may be some sort of risk involved in that. I mean, there may not be. He may come out, do interviews, get some really positive, you know, feedback.
He wouldn't be the first, would he? I mean, if his name was John Smith, I try and look at it laterally. If his name was John Smith, would we be having this conversation? No, we wouldn't. That's not to take away from, you know, the crime that he's committed and whatnot. But we're talking about John down the street. He's already been given a chance in the community. And the reason why he isn't is because of the systems and the forces and the prison service. It's their insecurity why they're not going to give him a chance, I think.
Well, if you think some of the most recent sort of really serious child rape murders that have been given 35 year tariffs, 35 year tariffs for child rape and murder, and he's done 48 years, just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not, it's not right. So yeah, I think it's because the situation is so unique. We've not had this situation before. I mean, maybe when I can't remember which of the craze died first. You know, there was all the hoo-ha about attending the funeral and stuff like that. I personally think the risk management side of it, sorry for the technical talk, the risk management side of it would be very, very difficult. But like I said, how can a child murderer, a child rapist be given 35 years and then someone who has not done the most heinous of crimes be still in prison for 48 years?
If you're an armed robber, you do less time than a paedophile. Paedophiles' crimes in Canada some years ago now as well, over 20, 30 years ago, they're considered that bad, of course, which they are. Their sentences were imposed that they weren't released back into society as quick to harm children or women or men or whoever again. That is the point that I think a lot of people in this country have a serious problem with. The criminal justice system have risk assessments and such in place for serious sex offenders and many other crimes that where people should not be on the street, and they are. Now, Charlie's offences are prison committed, and because they're prison committed and his behaviour, he's deemed as what he does in prison, he will do when he's released. Excellent, you have to consider that. But on the rationality side of that, he hasn't been released into a normal where he can just, hasn't got a door open for him. He's at an age now where he can approach him at zero possibility of him being violent again as you get to 70 and reckon he's ill, which of course he's got those factors to be considered still. But everybody keeps going on about what he's done in prison. Why don't we see how he gets out? But yeah, I do think there should be a release plan, and that, I think it's Warren Hill that I mentioned earlier. And they integrate you back with around people who are long-termers and such. Put him on the left, he's not going to work. Put him in a place with a big house like Lantar House in its day, but a little bit smaller. That would work.
Third Levington would work for him. That's just a tiny little...
Yeah. So that's like that. There's no reason why he can't be released. What about Terry Wayne? He got released after sitting in a room for being 9 years.
Yeah, that is such a bad comparison.
Yeah, and what I meant was, he was locked in a room himself under torture and such. Same as Charlie, but of course, you know, but you understand, didn't it? I got released after 20 years. I was like a sponge. I couldn't wait for society. I absorbed it with great speed and just different kind of bins and different kind of cars and food and StatNav and memorable information. I was still doing that 4 years later with memorable information. I just didn't have a clue. It was like a new language. So confusing with computers and that. But here I am today. I'm a law-abiding citizen. Conducting a life where I think I'm giving something back to the community. And I believe Charlie can do exactly the same if he's around the right people and released into society where it can be simply managed, where he's got the right people around him to keep things calm and keep him away from problems, risk assess it really well for the people who've got the right intentions for him. If you're going to do it all, do it at Cambridge University. You ain't going down the fucking Albert Arms. All right? So that has to be considered. And if he gets that right, I think is coming to society very easy. I'm sorry for taking the platform.
No, it's fine. Go on.
I'm gonna have to go, folks.
Molly, thanks very much for your input.
I would love to stay and chat.
Don't forget the downward dog.
We'll be downward dogging for at least.
We get
an
locked
hour
up for that.
Take care, Holly. Yeah. See you soon.
Nice to see you guys.
See you later.
Yeah, Steve. You know, as you say, it's a unique situation, so it needs a unique solution, yeah? You know, he's been to Rampton, Broadmoor and Ashworth, yeah? And all them prisons, you know, I think they, you know, a Broadmoor is £300,000 a year to keep an inmate. You know, it goes down to 200, 250, and then you go to a B cat, which is about 120, and then a C cat, which is, you know, a bit less, and then a D cat is about 40,000 quid a year. And the trouble with prison is that when you actually need that money and that help is when you leave, they give you £23.50 and put you on a dole. So, you know, we need a unique solution for a unique person and a unique whatever, yeah? And I think they should spend some of that money in setting up a program for Charlie where they can put him in accommodation, where they can have someone or people there that could integrate him back into society. I don't think a DCAT's going to be any good to him because, you know, I've been to a few DCATs in my life and they are not worth... You know, they're not worth nothing. You know, they're just smoking mirrors for the public. You know, at the end of the day, they're a carrot for anyone who's been in prison. You know, at the end of your sentence, you'll go to a DCAT and everything's going to be hunky-dory and you're going to get this and that, but you get nothing. You know,
all
you
get... I will say, mate, about the DCATs, just on that, I agree with what you're saying because I ended up in a DCAT, having worked in the prison service. The only thing I will disagree with is that what did you think of the home leaves and the town leaves every week? Because the home leaves are really, in my eyes, what's reintegrating you back into some kind of life.
You know what? We had so much shit from the OMU and our personal officers. You know, I spent 12 months there, and in the last 3 months they actually cleared me, and I went home for Christmas. You know, and so many guys get messed around for the OMUs. I think in the whole year that I was in Spring Hill, 300 men actually decided to go back to prison because it was so bad. They were bored. There was no work. And you know what? A DCAT is a lottery. You know, if there's 600 prisoners in open prison, yeah?
Yeah.
You know, if you get there, at any one time, you have to have 300 prisoners in the prison to make it work. So if you get there after that 300 have gone out to work, then you have to wait until all them have lost their jobs or whatever, which normally is not the case. You normally do 12 months, you know, and then you get nothing. And what they're obligated to give you 14 days, which is 2 weeks, community service, and that's supposed to reintegrate you back into society. There's a lot more milling around,
mate. There's no routine. It's basically look after yourself, and if you've got nothing to do, I mean, that's what in prison, that's what people struggle with, as you know, coming out of the routine.
I don't think that would be conducive to Charlie's mental health or well-being going there. You know, in fact, it'd take him backwards. As I said, he needs structure. He needs people that would support him, a good support network. And we can only do that by investing in his future. And the only way you can do that is spend some of the money that they have to keep him in prison to help him keep him out.
The only problem you've got there, mate, the only problem you've got there is if you give it to Charlie, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? If Charlie gets it, we all know the society we live in where, you know, we all, you know, sue the arse off people or whatever. If Charlie gets it, you will also automatically have 500,000 people wanting it. And the lawyers will be all over it.
Go on, Terry, sorry.
Yeah, we put people in witness protection. You have the guys that killed that young kid up in Liverpool. They get false identities. They get housing. They get everything. You know, so it can be done. It's a fallacy to say it can't be done. He can't get the support or the help he needs because of money. There are organisations and institutions that will bend over backwards to see Charlie succeed because it'd be in their best interest.
I think that
prison governor nailed it in. You know, I don't know any psychiatric hospital or therapeutic prison in the country that has actually said that a man is okay to leave prison because it goes against their narrative and their mantra. You know, they know because as soon as one person leaves prison that they said, we believe that this guy is okay, and he then commits an offence, they go back to square one. And they won't have, the powers that be will not have that. And this is why he will never, ever be cleared to leave there. So he needs a completely different release plan than most prisoners and something that's going to support him and set him up to succeed instead of fail.
A unique release plan, that is key. Bobby, you've listened intently, and I know sometimes you come on here and you say, I feel a bit out of place. Well, tonight's probably one of those nights, because obviously we've all got something to say on this, but I'm interested in having you on, Bobby. You've always got an opinion on stuff. you'll have seen the news, over mm-hmm. the years and watched watched the various incarnations from Michael Peterson to to Charlie Bronson to Charlie Arnold and now to Charlie Salvador. What's your take on the situation he's in?
Well, Charles Salvador, we'll call him, because that's what he currently calls himself, is a unique character. Do I think he should be let out? I don't think he should be in prison. Do I think he will be? Not a chance. I don't think there'll be a chance. Forget your parole boards. He is one of three times I can think of when people have challenged the authorities, and for the authorities to lose, they would look foolish. There was the great train robbers in the 60s. There was the craze. Now there's Charles Bronson or Salvador. All given long sentences because they challenged the authorities. Now, the powers that be will not bow down to this, and they will see that as being a loss if that happens. Now, Charlie's a unique character. This guy can't be let out and just left, you know. We all want to, if this guy wants to go live in a small, little cottage and paint for the rest of his life, he's 70 now. He was locked up, was it 1974, 75? All them years, he comes out, he's going to be a celebrity. There's no doubt about it. He's a big character. He isn't going to come out to a peaceful life. He's going to need guidance, a lot of guidance and protection in many ways. Do I think... I just don't think it's going to happen. It's sad to say, but I think he's a victim of the system, but yeah, he hasn't helped himself. He's challenged the system for many years. Now, what makes him unique is, like I've said with the other two examples, I know kids in the 20s who know who Charles Salvador is. That makes him quite unique, who know who the Krays are. And these are bigger than life characters. And they come out to me, he come out tomorrow, the media's going to be, just going to, he's not going to have a life.
A decent earning potential, mate. If he comes out, with a decent PR manager, et cetera, he's not like a normal prisoner, like you say. He's got potential to hit the ground running.
But at the same time, he's got to, he's been conditioned. He's a victim of his surroundings. How is he going to change that? How is he going to adapt at the same time as having all this pressure on him? You know, like you said, John Smith comes out, he's left alone. I don't watch any of the documentaries regarding him, I think people go on what they hear in the media, what they get the stories there for likes of Steve who knows him personally, you know. That's all we can base it on. We don't actually know what the guy is like one-to-one, you know. Obviously, no one spent 24 hours with the guy, have they?
That's the point. No one knows what he's like.
I'm not saying he's a bad guy in the slightest. I think he's a victim of the system, and, he's institutionalized. To put him out in the it'd have to be very, very careful, very structured, procedure to bring this guy out.
Has he got much family, Steve?
Yeah, I mean, he's got people out there. He's got people who could obviously take him in. His mother's still alive, although she's at the later stages of her life. Mm-hmm. By her own admission in the documentary, if he went and stayed with her, she'd keep him in a cage. But joking aside, he does have his son. His son has suffered over the years with mental health issues, so he couldn't look after him. Of course, Irene Dunro, his former missus, is on the outside. He has a sister who sadly doesn't speak to. But other than that, it would be very much a case of a managed, managed release. He would be fending for himself, really.
He's a one-off. He's unique. He's a one-off. They would have to have, it'd take a very special team to be able to manage this guy so that he lives a, content, happy life. He's 70 years old. He's probably got 10, 15 years. 20 years at a push.
He's a fit old lump, mind. I'm telling you now. Yeah. I mean, we're around about the same height, but by the way, he is very thick set.
he's the type of guy that the journalists are send helicopters up for. You know, he's that kind of. He's the type of guy that they could make big money off this guy. So I would manage him. That's what I'm saying. If he came out, I don't think he should be out.
I would manage him by keeping him away from the professional people as much as I could for a good 6 months. Mm-hmm. And I'd get him living in the deepest, darkest woods somewhere, okay? Where he's got a report to a probation officer up in the bleeding, in up somewhere in the Lake District. He lives in the middle of nowhere with a team around him or one or two people. And you know what? Let that man find himself again. Let that man find fresh air and calmness. And then if you stick him somewhere where he can live, and it is in the bloody middle of Dartmoor, he wouldn't care, as long as he can paint and stuff. But you just bear this in mind, please. There is a release plan that he could quite easily be adapted to, but it's where you put him and who you put him with. Simple as that. Okay? Yes. And it hasn't got to be his man as manic as people are saying, because you would get reporters going and see him, but they can be ushered away with a couple of vegan yelping dogs. But nonetheless, what I mean is Charlie is one of thousands in the system. You're going to have many more going up to the numbers that he is at. Because I was a product of the system if I'd have been in the mainstream system. This is very worthy of the point I make. I know, Charlie, I've done time with it. Mm-hmm. So if I hadn't been in the special secure units, the staff at the time that was threatening to kill me said, "We'll kill you, Lane, and get down here." I only took the morning to one of them. He said, "Don't talk to me, you're a con." Well, it gives a stretch. So I'm a polite fella. So because the staff who worked in the unit had to be security cleared, nobody else would come in that unit unless the bell went. And then they all come running over from the wings. If I had a problem with that member of staff who was threatening to kill me or hit me or whatever, for no blooming reason, you know, staff testify to that fact, but nonetheless, it's also good in the job. If I'd have sorted that member of staff on the mainstream prison system, I'd have gone into the segregation and I'd have been met by a waiting committee. I would then be a product of society. And my point is this, I'm here now. But because I had the problems with the staff in the units, I was wrapped up, bent up, zip-tied, stripped, and put in block in a strip cell. Okay, and there was no heavy-handedness as such. You know, you get me, whatever. But I would have been like Charlie, but here I am now in front of you. Okay, and I've led successful businesses, and I'm in the community doing a lot for the community. I'm not saying Charlie can do exactly like me, but I would have been like Charlie now, because I wouldn't have forgotten, and I'm known for that in the prison system. Many of them schools used to go over the enemy, so I'm going to get you the first chance I get. Do not worry about that. And I would, all right, because they stamped on my head or bleeding, standing on my throat and stuff like that. But I'm here in front of you.
Yeah.
You've just got to sort this system out, folks.
Yeah. You know, can I just ask, you know, this recent parole he had and the statement he made to this parole board, do you think he's given up? Do you think he's just totally given up? Because the statement
I'll
he made...
I'll give you my view from speaking to him throughout the COVID period. We made a deliberate pact to do those interviews and to release them, drip-feed them, to put them out there to show that he was sane. And from my perspective, you know, I personally feel that Charlie's a realist and he knows that, you know, in the grand scheme of things, this is progress. And it's not just progress for him. It's progress for other inmates who come after him who should have a public parole hearing so that it's not done behind closed doors, not done out of sight of anything else. Because, you know, where Charlie was fighting for the rights, a bit like when Alan Lord and the lads went on the roof at Strangeways, they were fighting for their civil rights within prison. The place was horrendous. They were living in horrendous facilities and they made that protest and went on the roof to try and get change. And the prison system was changed because of Strangeways riot. I believe on a lesser extent, this is what Charlie's trying to do with this. Do I believe that Charlie thinks he's going to get out? In my heart of hearts, no. I think Charlie realises he's not going to get out. The best he could hope for is this public parole hearing so that everybody can see it's transparent. Mm. They've now got 2 or 3 weeks to think about it after... Well, once the final day happens this week, they'll go away and they'll make the decision and they'll come back. But the fact that it's all in the public eye means nothing can be swept under the carpet. The media will be asking questions. He's got all of this publicity. And generally, whatever decision they come to, they'll have to give a reason. It'll be a reason that's out in the public eye. It won't be swept away. Now, that's your unique opportunity. And I generally think Charlie will be happy with that. I think he's institutionalized beyond, you know, beyond, you know,
well, I was going to say
Kevin and Terry was, you know, I think he's happy in a lot of ways. He's got his exercise. Yeah. He's got his, you know, he's got his health. But I tell you what, if you got an opportunity to come out as well, he'd be over the moon. But it
listen, he's screaming to get out. Do not worry about that. Inside him, he's screaming to get out.
Right. Yeah.
That's because that little hope in his heart is in there and he's pumping away. And I can tell you now, so can Terry.
You want to be
out. Do you know what you said there, Steve?
He's just making the best of the bad situation.
Terry, can I just say this? Because, you know, you're all taking up a lot of the broadcast. You know, when you turn around and said about him, you know, wanting to, he's institutionalized and he might not want to come out. One thing that got me, and I thought it was very sad in a way, was when he said, oh, I can go out and make earnings from my paintings, which is a good thing. You know, he's thinking I can make earnings from my paintings, so I can go out and do that. But I don't know. I get the feeling the way he was saying himself, yeah, he wants to get out, but at the same time, I don't know if the person thinks I'm not going to. You know what I'm getting? I'm not, but I stress again, no one's saying he should not get out. It should, but I should say this public parole hearings, my God, I agree with you 100% that all parole hearings should be done in the public because then you know whether corruption's happening or not.
Things in prison are very, exactly what you've said there, especially someone with his track record with in the prison system and hurting prison staff, etc. There will be no doubt bias, and we all know it. You know, it's not right, but there will be bias, even if it's from probation or wherever you want to call it. It's just natural, isn't it? So they should be done publicly. They should be done fairly.
But, you know, I don't know nobody in the system who's been in solitary or in prison don't want to come out. You know, it's crazy to think that he wants to be in now. You know, he's better placed than anyone I know. You know, his original crime was monetary, yeah? He's not a predator. He's not a murderer. He's not a paedophile. He's not a rapist. It was monetary. You know, I don't believe in rehabilitation. I don't think it works, period, yeah? But what I do believe, if you can change a man's circumstances, if a man can come out and he's got money and he's better placed than anyone else to earn money from his books, from his paintings and everything else, then he will come back into society and he will live like a normal person. It's only when you haven't got any money and you haven't got a support network that you're more likely to revert back to type to get that. You know, the biggest evil in this fucking world is money. And he will earn money hand over fist from the films, from books, from podcasts, everything. Yeah. You know, so he ain't gonna have no problem with that. So I think
we get the public opinion overall. I think is that, you know, he's done his time. He needs to be, you know, left to live the rest of his life in peace. But I personally think it's an higher authority that's keeping him there. I think they feel as though he's making a mockery of the system. And they're making examples the same way I said it with the craze and with the great train robbers. You know, that's what I think. He's just a victim of that.
But he was made by, you know, the 60s, 70s and 80s and early 90s. Prison was a completely different place. You know, it's not like it is today. We're talking about brutality. We're talking gratuitous violence towards inmates on a daily basis when violence was the only thing, you know. So, you know, He has only known violence. You know, he went in as a young 21-year-old kid, yeah? And all he's come against is an immovable object in a system that, you know, were all ex-army, you know, and the only thing they knew was violence. You know, I've been in a block. I've had three broken ribs. I've had a busted shoulder. I've had a broken nose. I've had enough black eyes in the block. And as Kevin just said, that's just for saying good morning, you know? And I know that Charlie has been through so much more than me. He's been gassed, he's been beaten, you know, and for him to come out, and you know, look, we've all got logic, we've all got understanding, yeah? I know, I was doing 18 years and I was down a block, yeah? I knew that if I started smashing screws, you know, I would get another 4 years, another 5 years, another 10 years. So you know what? I held back and refrained. I covered up and I went down and I let them do what they wanted and that was it. You know, they got their pound of flesh.
Can I ask you guys who've been in front of parole boards? I don't get why he behaved like he did.
Do you know what? You have to remember that.
Can you understand what he was doing?
Yeah, but what you got to remember, he was 21 years old when he went into prison.
He hasn't had no
room inside prison to educate himself to a high level. He's around people that are in their 20s. And you know what? He's not even around people in their 20s. He's in solitary confinement. He's not speaking to anyone. The only thing that he is doing, he's very creative. He's doing lots of art. But he doesn't have conversation with officers. The only people that he actually speaks to are probably the odd psychologist that comes down there. You know, so he's had no room in there to advance his education,
right.
To be articulate his social skills. Yeah. He's stayed in one position. He's by all means a 21-year-old, 70-year-old man. You know,
Social skills have been put on hold, if you like. He won't have any social skills.
Well, so he's a product of the system.
Just to play devil's advocate there, mate. I don't know the guy. I've seen bits. If we think that he's an intelligent man, you guys know him. I don't. Would you not have thought at some point that he would have thought, hang on a minute, they're obviously playing me like a fiddle here, and I'm doing everything that's feeding them that shite? At one point, he must have sat there in, you know, at some point in his sentence and thought, well, I tell you what, I'll flip reverse it, and I'll just start towing the line, and then we'll see what. After maybe parole hearing 1, 2, or 3, somebody must have got him down and said, right, let's change tact here, pal.
Right. Sorry, buddy. It's some people just get caught up in a system of violence and helping. I won't let you beat me. You're not going to do that to me. That's the way they're made. So these people should have been treated differently. We shouldn't have so much violence in terms of how we deal with difficult situations with an inmate in front of you. And if we had a system where it was more that way inclined, you wouldn't have such retaliation from these inmates. So he becomes heavily entrenched in his thought pattern, and I will not be beat. And as in, probably sometimes now he says things like, I have no regrets. Whatever hands I've been dealt with, I live my life. I can understand what he's saying there. But because he's not used to saying something passionate to staff or in relation to the criminal justice system, he may come out and say, I've got no regrets. What he may have liked to have said deep down inside, which he might have said he was walking around the field 6 months later and said, you know what, I've done some things that I wouldn't have wanted to cause some harm to some of the people. But because of who he is at the minute and where he's speaking from, you're getting a certain response because he's living in that the time. He's heavily entrenched. So there's a lot of that to be considered in how he answers people. But inside him, very kind man. And I know it's violent. It's problematic. It's a problematic case of ADSG or something like that. Okay, but he's now an adult. The man.
I think he did wake up. I think he woke up in 1999, That was his last time he'd done anything. And since 1999, he ain't done anything. He's done his art. He sends his art out to help kids. He supports lots of charities and everything else. He hasn't done anything since 1999. That's 23 years. You know, that's a lot of time to think. I think he woke up 23 years ago, you know?
And at the same time...
I didn't know that.
At the same time, as you stated, you've got guys who are taking control of him that have minimal training. Like you said, 7 weeks. These guys aren't trained to deal with a guy that's been in solitary for so many years. So it's all screwed up. Everything's screwed up.
Our solitary system, that's what he's been in. He's been in the British solitary system. So why don't we look at other solitary systems in other countries, like I said, Norway, and see how they reintegrate people or get them back living a normal life. Do we have to be that hell-bent, hang you and persecute you and torture you because you are a criminal? The best people in the world sometimes are criminals who have made a mistake, and they stand up for the decency in people and go on to do better and greater things. Doesn't mean they're terrible people because they've been in prison. I mean, the best of the best and the worst of the worst. So I think sometimes we should be given a chance. And look how we're treating our society, very briefly. We've got thousands of people in charge position that we're going to have to deal with at some point. So we better get it right pretty soon.
You have all the IPP lads, don't forget.
It's ironic, that after nearly 48 years in prison, and treating him like an animal, they're actually considering putting him into a special unit where they can treat him like a human being. That's crazy. You know, if they would have treated him like a human being in the first place, he would never have been in the situation now. You know, no man that I know that's been down that block, and come out of the way he has. We're talking about the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, when when savage physical violence was the name of the game, and that's all he's been used to. Yeah. And they corrupted him and they turned him into a monster. Yeah, and they have the audacity to then turn around and say he's dangerous. You know, it's crazy.
But the thing is, doesn't people just answer me this, Terry Rice? He can't be the only one that ever had officers coming at him and brutalizing him. So why is it that some of the others, or the majority, vast majority of others, had the sense to think, wait a minute, you know, I'll like what Lee said, I'm not going to give them what they want.
I know people that do it that have done 30, sorry, Anne. There's quite a few in the system that don't get reported on, because they're not so notorious as Charlie, but have the problem that Charlie has that goes around the merry-go-round system. And that's the IEP system. They've got him doing 2 years, they're doing 11, 12, 13.
Yeah, that's what I said before, Kev, the IPP.
John Massey, loads of them. There's loads of them in there.
30 and 40 years and things like that. And unfortunately, the system it's not able to cater for what's going on in there. So there's going to be a lot of people like Charlie. And there is a lot of people like Charlie already.
Yeah, I think they signal Charlie out. The media has to take responsibility for this as well. You know, they've made him into a celebrity criminal. You know, gave him no notoriety. I think they have to take the blame for this. You know, some of the stuff that they've written over the years is scandalous. It's fictional. It's you know, it's none of it's true. But yet they put him in week after week after week. And you know, and they're keeping his name up there. They're keeping his whole, you know, his old life still is making it current. He hasn't done anything since 1999. He hasn't had no trouble, no fights. He's not kidnapped anyone. He's not held anyone hostage since 1999. That's like 20, nearly 24 years. You know, he hasn't done anything. So you know, he deserves to come out now. You know,
he's a victim. You're certainly right there. He's a victim of that media that was portrayed years ago. The Birdman of Broadmoor, prime example. That's what they used to call him. I mean, he's changed his name a lot. It's all about, you know, Charlie knows how to play the game, play the media game. As Lee said, you know, when he comes out, he's a license to print money. But that in itself brings a problem.
Could be a problem. Kevin, exactly.
Kevin's come out and
they're scared to let him out. He's vocal. He's very vocal.
It shouldn't be a case of the authorities are scared. It shouldn't be a case of treating him like any differently. It shouldn't be a case of making an example of him. It should be a case of his merits.
We all know there's corruption at the top.
Yeah. But his release should be based on his merits. You know, he hasn't done anything since 1999. That in itself it shows me that he's thinking about the consequences of his action. He hasn't attacked any officers. He hasn't attacked any inmates. He hasn't even attacked a psychologist. And if you met a psychologist in prison, you'll know that.
If he can sustain 23, 24 years, you know, that's a tremendous amount of time for anybody to show that they're changed, you know, or they've calmed or whatever. You know, it's a tremendous, but I do think that, you know, he's too vocal for the. If he was a quiet man, I think they'd look at it different. And it's sad to see, because I don't think he should be in prison. But
I don't think he should be judged for being a bit cocky and you know, just a bit jolly. You know, he said, I've had more porridge than Goldilocks or the Three Bears. Mm-hmm. You know, the one good thing you have in solitary confinement, where you have a camaraderie with the five or six guys on your unit, because you talk through the wall. You know, the only thing that keeps you going is humour. And it's very dark humour, you know. And you know, you could be. I've sat there with black eyes, broken nose. I've had busted ribs, and I've sat there and we've laughed about it, because that's all you've got in the block. That's all you've got.
He needs to do, though, this is it. And I've been in situations where you've been up against authority, and you have to quickly work out what do they want me to do, what do they want me to say to get what I want out of this. And you have to work that out. And then, and they even know, they knew I was more or less fishing for what they wanted and giving them the answers they wanted to hear. Now, that sounds, which I thought was, why are they, do you have to sort of, like, it's like bootlicking, isn't it? You've got to tell them what they want to hear. But Charlie, I think that's what was sad about what was coming out. He was talking, like, as you said, teenager or someone in the 20s. That's what was like, worry about it too. I think he'll get out. actually, Bobby, I do think he will get out. I do. I've got a suspicion he will do get out.
Can I just add a comment, please? So when we talk about the jury in the attention, that also kept Charlie alive. Because, unfortunately, wherever you look at it, it's something that has fed him his strength to keep going and the passion. Used in an adverse way or a positive way, but it's been used against him in an adverse manner. But that's all he's had to keep him going. And I think that's all he knows.
He's written a few books now. He's written fitness books. He's very charismatic, you know. And having his time on the podcast, in the paper, you know, it gives him something to do. You know, as long as he's alive out there or out here, it gives him something to look forward to. You know, it gives him much. You know, he knows that he's got to come out. You know, for me, I think it's a travesty. I think it's an insult to every single person in prison. You know, I don't know if any of you guys know about the IPP system, yeah? The IPP system was introduced here by Blunkett, yeah? And it was introduced from America. It didn't work over there. So what we did, we took the same format and we brought it over here, knowing that most of the guys couldn't reach that benchmark. Yeah. Now we've got 6,500 IPP prisoners who only got like 2 years and 5 years now, who's done 10, 11 and 15 years. Yeah. They're being tortured. You know, these guys, you know, I said, since 2010, to 2018, 3,500 prisoners leaving prison have committed suicide. You know, that's basically one every single day. No investigation, no accountability, no judicial review. You know why? Because no one cares. That's why.
Well, that's the cruel reality of society. Generally don't care about a hell of a lot of things, like the people that you say that get out of prison with short sentences. People don't care. That's the way
no one cares. That's why he has to do. That's why he has to do the Channel 4 programs. That's why he has to do Steve's podcast. That's why he has to come on here all the time. Otherwise, he would just disappear into oblivion.
Yeah,
he's a necessary evil.
I know what you're saying, but that can go against him. I've always said, the best thing is to keep your mouth shut and keep your head down.
You know what? There are guys that keep their mouth shut in prison, and they're still languishing in solitary confinement. I know, Johnny Massey, 45 years. He actually went out and his dad was dying, and he actually went to his dad's hospital bed, and when he went back to his hospital that night, they recalled him. I done a robbery and got 18 years. He got a recall and done more on a recall than what I did for the robbery, and that guy has got no notoriety, no publicity, but done 45 years. So you know you're fucked if you do, and you're fucked if you don't.
So what can be done? What can be changed to help these guys?
Bobby,
public hearings.
We are all, exactly, Lee. But the thing is, we have to understand that we're all made differently. And how I respond is different to how we all respond in front of us, pretty much, in some degree. Now, there's a certain amount of people in prison that don't have the wherewithal to do what we're saying, keep your mouth shut. Now, they're just not made up like that. They maybe may have attention deficit orders and all sorts of difficulties, or handling being in prison for 13 years and only came in doing three. And it might be for punching someone. If punched someone twice, we've got an IPP. But they're not real maniacs. But they've got a license around them that has imprisoned them for a silly amount of years and taken their life away from them. They break and they become a product of the system.
I think we've all known for years and years that the rehabilitation in its present form doesn't work. You know, the service providers are earning vast sums of money from people that are incarcerated. The people that should do the rehabilitation should be the prison officers, the governors, not civil servants. We should take the politics out of prison, and we should let the people that actually know about prisons and understand them do their job. That's what needs to be done.
Well, unfortunately, you can only rehabilitate someone by introducing them back out into society.
Rehabilitate someone by giving them self-worth. You know, we've got people leaving prison with nowhere to live. You know, they're being let out of prison with nowhere to live. But the prison authorities are actually telling the Joe public that they've been rehoused and they've gone to somewhere to live. Because when you leave prison, you have to give a postcode or an address to get a travel warrant. Now, to get that travel warrant, you have to do that. If you don't do that, you don't get a travel warrant and you don't get released. So that they, you know, the prison authorities have got 93% success rate of housing ex-offenders. Basically, they house none of them, you know. So you do eight years and you leave with nothing. And that's why most people jump on that revolving door of recidivism and go straight back in again. You know, there needs to be joined up thinking between the housing, probation and the local authorities' councils to rehouse these men and make it part of the prison sentence that they actually get trained to do a job. And the people that employ these people should be subsidised so they employ them. So that would incentivize them. So if we incentivize them with somewhere to live and their rent paid because they go to work, and we incentivize the employees or the employer to employ these guys, then maybe we wouldn't have that revolving door time and time and time again. Because it's the same people going back time and time again.
Yeah, because that's what they need. It's a bit like I've said on Steve's podcast. At the end of the day, all the prison is a glorified hotel. It needs guests.
That's what it is.
Otherwise, hotel shuts. Very simple. Yeah. It's, you know, that's the higher level of it. But I totally agree with what you're saying with rehousing lads coming out. I think at the time you get 77 quid. Now, you know, I lived in, Northwest, and I was in the Northeast. Travel warrant. I mean, you get a travel warrant, you get home, you've got 77 quid. Now, for instance, somebody may, you can put an address on there where a friend says, you know, he can stay at mine. Who's to say in 2 days? He just said you can stay 2 days. You've got no money, you've got no traceability. And guess what? If you don't make that probation appointment, which is fine, you know, you've got to toe the line and show you're willing, but you're back inside and they're going to resort.
The local council that you actually lived in, or the area that you actually lived in, when you actually go to the local council to get rehoused, they actually say they can't actually see you for five years because you intentionally made yourself homeless by going to prison. That's their mantra now. So, you know, most guys coming out of prison are self-defoul.
So you all touched on some point there. So I've been in discussions with, I haven't got the fish to mention their name now, because I didn't know this was going to come up. But it's a charity who are training funds to put a little close, for instance, of houses. And people will be released into that little close. They have a little community centre there. But all ex-prisoners who have been, they're in training now, in a skill, and they will continue their training in work. So this, that would suit Charlie down to the T if it was away from, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
Don't you think, though, Charlie won't have any money-wise, he won't have any problems, and maybe with all the press that and the money he can make out of it, he's actually in a better situation, because he'll be that watching of that many people around him. He won't feel the need, or he won't get the opportunity to do anything to put him back.
That's a big side of it. I think he's going to use it to the maximum potential, and he knows that every eye in the world is going to be on him. There'll be no slip-ups.
At the end of the day, we've got to remember that he's a unique character. He's a one-off. These kind of guys come around once in a lifetime. During our lifetime, we'll never probably ever see a person like Charles Bronson. You know, he's so larger than life. He's virtually, you know, he's like a cartoon. He's in some ways, and he's universally known. He's known abroad. He's known everywhere. And like I say, there's generations, young generations. Every generation's heard of this guy.
And I think a lot of the craze. If he is a fighter like you suggest, and a very determined individual, he's going to come out. Mm. I wouldn't say with a chip on his shoulder, but he's going to come out with a massive kind of gusto to prove everyone right in the public and to prove the system wrong. So I reckon he's going to be.
I'm going to draw this to an end because I don't like these to drag on. You've all been very kind coming on, and I really appreciate it. And I want to thank you all for coming on. The chat's been very respectful as well. I like Kevin's idea. Six months in somewhere very reclusive, and giving them that opportunity to try and pull round. And I think that would be great. I do want to give you guys an opportunity. Kevin's book, if you haven't read it yet, get yourself on Amazon. UK's Mr. Shawshank, Fitted Up and Fighting Back by Kevin Lane.
Thank you. Fantastic.
I've read it already.
It's a great book. Terry has got a lot. You just need to go on Amazon. Terry's got more books probably than me, I think, now. Resettlement Diaries is one of them. But he's got so many stories which have taken, so many books which take you on the various journeys, and well worth a read whether you're into your true crime, whether you're into prison books, whatever, it gives an honest opinion. And I think, you know, Terry's teamed up with
Terry. I'll just say one thing. You look like that fella out of No Alien Covenant, the one at the beginning that throws the DNA in the wall. So that's what you look on the front of that book.
I've also got Bronson and me. Lee Wortley and Paula Williamson wrote.
Steve Wraith's got a book out. Never.
No.
We also published Irene Dunroe's book, The Truth, The Whole Truth, and Nothing But the Truth, which are available at badboysbooks.net. Bobby, Ann, Lee, thank you very much for coming on. Holly, of course, joined us earlier. Kevin and Terry, we all wanted the same thing, which was great. Thanks very much for coming.
Cheers, Kevin. Cheers, Lee.
A big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. You can find them at skipsandbins.com. Telephone 0800 25 45 253. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com. Easy contract, free and pay as you go, waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's sauces, which are handmade in Cumbria. You can order them from mrvickys.co.uk or by calling 01768 210102. Welcome aboard to Frui Vita Getaways. You can email them at fruivitagetaways@gmail.com. Call or text them 0792 842 7895. Please join and share the Facebook group as well at Frui Vita Getaways. Book your holidays or short breaks in the UK or around the world with them. Let them find your happy place. ABTA and ATOL registered. Thanks to Media Arts for all the help with the video side of things. And thanks to qtechshop.co.uk, the makers of pool tables and snooker tables in Wallsend, Newcastle. And the guys who run our website, nufcmatters.com, where you can buy lots of t-shirts and merchandise. If you want to subscribe to the show, hit the subscribe button underneath this video today. It is free to do so. Hit the thumb up to like the video. It's good for the algorithm. And click share to share to your other social media. If you do subscribe, we do send you a free car sticker. To get that, email John at nufcmatters.com and he'll post you one out. If you want to join the NUFC Matters cult, then put your smartphone over this QR code now and it will take you straight there. Alternatively, go to the website, nufcmatters.com, and you can join for a one-off payment of £25. You'll receive a cup, a pen, a membership card, and a scarf and entry into the monthly draw. You can also join via YouTube, and if you click join beneath the video, you will see a variety of prices and how you can support the channel. You can alternatively make a donation with a super chat in the chat tonight. Just click the dollar sign. We're also available on iTunes and Spotify and other podcast providers. We also help the food bank on this show. NUFCfansfoodbank.co.uk is where you'll find the match day bucket, and you can make a virtual donation 365 days of the year. As always, we've got a whole host of events coming up throughout the year. And even when Obi Solano takes place on Saturday the 25th of March at the Tyneside Irish Centre, tickets £15, book now at nufcmatters.com. And even when Peter Beardsley at Leamington Labour Club, tickets are £20, 31st of March, and you can get them direct from the venue. And evening with Nobby Solano, Good Friday, the 7th of April at 4 p.m. Tickets are a tenner and available behind the bar at Felling Cricket Club in Gateshead. An evening with Supermac, hosted by Gibbo at the Time House Surf Cafe, Tuesday the 11th of April. And tickets direct from the venue. This is a limited ticket event, only 35 tickets available, so book soon. And an evening with Frank Clark and John Gibson, Thursday the 20th of April. Tickets are £15. Book now at nufcmatters.com. In June, Rob Lee will be at Louis Liquor Store in Newcastle, and you can get tickets direct from the venue. And an evening with Rob Lee, Lee Clark, John Beresford takes place the following evening, Friday the 2nd of June at the Grand Hotel in Gosforth. This is in aid of the Heal and Tour charity, and tickets are available from their website, www.healandtour.org.uk /events. And if you're a boxing fan, the Night of Champions comes to Gateshead at the Fed. Frank Bruno, Ricky Hatton, Nigel Benn, and Joe Calzaghe are part of the UK tour, and you can get your tickets from www.goldstarpromotions.co.uk.